This is an ABC podcast.
Good morning. This is Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia. Today, we bring you a special holiday episode of the show. Each day this week, we look at the key stories this year that shaped one country in the region. Today, it's Papua New Guinea. We look back at the historic election of two female MPs into PNG's parliament.
I've worked on this for 5 years, so I was pretty confident that the race will be between myself and the sitting member.
2022 also marked the return of Pacific Break, the region's largest music competition. We'll relive the moment when Danielle from Port Moresby was crowned the winner.
Oh my gosh, I wasn't expecting it, honestly. Wow. I didn't prepare myself for this.
And we'll also take you to the football, soccer and rugby fields where PNG left their mark across the year as part of our 2022 review of sports in PNG. All that and more. I'm Priyanka Srinivasan. So glad to have your company. And to look back at the year that was for PNG, I asked a friend of the show and One Talk journalist Belinda Quora to take me through the key stories from 2022. Good fellow morning, Luyu. Belinda, thank you so much for joining us show here on Pacific Beat.
Thank you very much for having me, Priyanka. It's always a pleasure to be with you here on Pacific Beat in the mornings.
And Belinda, we are doing this year in review. Today it's all about Papua New Guinea, and we can't do a year in review for 2022 without mentioning PNG's elections. Now, they were marred, as we know, by a lot of controversy, a lot of violence, but there were some good news out of the elections too, some silver linings. For you, Belinda, what were the key moments around the vote?
Thank you very much, Priyanka. I should admit it wasn't an easy task again to cover the elections here in Papua New Guinea for this year. I guess the highlights for me personally while covering would be the fact that we then again had a good number of female candidates who were contesting these elections. The Electoral Commission had confirmed in June this year that 142 women were contesting these seats, and a little lower to that of 2017, which was 167. I should say another highlight was voters were given a chance to vote for new MPs for brand new electorates, which reflected the need for better services, hopefully, into some of the larger electorates for the 2017 election, with the aim of allowing better deliverance of district and electorate funds and goods and services to those in rural areas. So from 111 seats for the 2017 election, this year saw an increase of open seats to 118. So I think that was a really a good thing for many of the large electorates who were needing much needed services with limited funding. I guess the best part of covering the election this year for me especially was the urban seats in Port Moresby, especially for Northeast, where the voices of our female candidates were adamant and tough, and they fought so hard to ensure the transparent election process was carried out by the Electoral Commission and its offices, from voting to counting. The experience of staying with them and seeing how scrutineers and voters had showed concerns for the process itself and how they were investigated was something that I continue to hold up until today, because I found it to be very interesting to also cover. It may have been extended for far too long because some seats were still to be declared in NCD before Parliament even set for its sitting. But Parliament welcomed two female candidates following this year's election for the Medang Raiko seat and the Central Provincial seat. And it was really a celebratory moment for most citizens and voters in Papua New Guinea.
Yes, yes. I believe the first female MPs in a decade were voted in. So quite historic. I mean, looking at other, I guess, historic moments this year, historic for some, I guess, we saw a lot of scrutiny placed on China's growing influence, not just in PNG, but across the Pacific. What are you hearing there in Port Moresby on the streets there? Is this concern for regular people there in Papua New Guinea?
It has become evident enough for a lot of city residents to realize this growing influence by China, given the fact that the local media has also been able to cover extensively the visits by Chinese leaders in the past couple of months. But to be honest, it has been a struggling time also for businesses and citizens, including many families who have been hit hard with the increase of goods and services that most people who are living in the city and I've spoken to are embracing real and genuine help that will improve their lives, including the economy. Most I've spoken to, like my taxi driver, shows a great appreciation towards countries like Australia, our closest neighbours, who have continuously been there for us, but also welcomes those who are able to go a step further to ensure that he is able to make enough money for his small business and also to help his family. So a lot of people are just wanting some improvement to their lives. And if that can be also enabled with this growing influence, then it's welcomed by many. But that's basically from what I've got from people I've spoken to in the last couple of months.
Yes, I guess, Belinda, those fundamental things like money and having a secure job is what matters, particularly after COVID-19, right? And the impact of things like border closures on Papua New Guinea's economy.
Definitely. People have come out struggling from COVID-19 due to the extensive lockdowns. And of course, I'm hoping that in the next couple of months, we can be able to see some improvement, maybe more improvement than this year.
Indeed. Now, let's turn to some good news stories, Belinda. I wanted to ask, through your reporting, your fabulous reporting with particularly One Talk this year, has there been any stories or someone you've interviewed that's really inspired you? What was your, I guess, journalism-related highlight for 2022?
And as you know, Priyanka, rugby league seems to be a very uniting topic for many of our Papua New Guineans. I guess it would be always the love of rugby league that continues to reflect how beautiful such occasions can amazingly unite clans and villages, including tribes, and the pride that I had when interviewing, I think, Papua New Guinea's former great NRL star, Marcos Bai, for One Talk. When the PNG Kumuls were in for the quarterfinal showdown with England in November this year, Marcos finished off by adding how wonderful it was to still back up a team during this trying times in the country, and especially after an election that broke many bridges amongst tribes. And the sport of rugby league continues to bring comfort for many who just want to feel good about being a Papua New Guinean. And I thought that finished off a good take for 2022 for me. And it was a message of hope, really. And it was all over social media. People, you know, stayed up till 4 a.m. just to watch their team, even if it's on the main road or at an open park. It was good to see that people are still using this sport as a way to, you know, still be able to jump together and embrace a team that is from Papua New Guinea.
Yes, yes. Sport definitely does that, isn't it? Brings people together and makes you look at the, I guess, happier things in life. And is there anything that you wish received more attention, perhaps, out of Papua New Guinea?
Yes, I guess the awareness and information surrounding the role of the fourth estate or the media in Papua New Guinea, I feel like it could have been better utilized and understood by not only those in authority, the government and stakeholders, but as also citizens in general. I feel that many, with so many things that's happening in all the sectors, it would be good to highlight how mainstream media remains very different from social media platforms and how they can be able to work together to disseminate information into the future more independently, I guess. I guess this is vital when the media remains very small still in Papua New Guinea. Thus, the task of penetrating to every home becomes a day-to-day challenge. And getting this process right, I feel, as a journalist, will be able to help the role and the image of the media, especially traditional media here in Papua New Guinea.
Yes, yes. And so important in fighting misinformation as well, isn't it? It's not the same as social media, these traditional sources, and should be protected. Well, let's look at the year ahead then, Belinda. We've been discussing about the stories that made 2022. But are there any stories for 2023 that you're most excited about? Is there an issue or a story that you're keeping an eye on?
For now, I guess I still want to keep track of our two female MPs and what they're doing. I mean, the next couple of months, how they're progressing and what challenges they may be already faced with into the next couple of years. I am also very much interested, and this is something that is talked about maybe in the islands areas of the country because they're actually feeling it. But I'd also like to look more at climate change and how not only the effects it's already having that we're writing little to probably no stories about, and also how PNG and its role in coming up with a legislative framework to regulate carbon trade for PNG and what that means for Papua New Guineans and our local people. So it would be good to get a sense of what people feel about the word climate change itself, and also try to see how PNG is able to help itself into the future when it comes to that.
Yes, fascinating. Oh, I hope you do those stories, Belinda. That sounds very, very interesting. And this, I've got a tricky question for you, Belinda, because we often talk about our highlights of the year. But what are you least looking forward to next year as a journalist? Is there a story that you just are dreading covering next year?
Okay, I think I don't know why it's always associated with PNG, but it seems to be the case most year round, and that's the issue of gender-based violence and violence in general. Priyanka, I hope in 2023, I hope that we may find more solutions that are able to better address this issue and pump more money where it can be able to find solutions and permanent solutions. I know we cannot be able to do that, as soon as possible, but especially seeing a decrease of these cases in all our communities would be something that I'd like to probably follow up on and also cover in the next couple of weeks.
Yes. I mean, it's one of those issues that as a journalist, you don't want to cover because you hope it doesn't happen in your communities, domestic violence and gender-based violence. Mm-hmm. But it is so important to bring that attention and hopefully resources and solutions, as you said, will follow that attention. So yes, good choice there. Let's hope there's less of that in 2023. Thanks, Belinda. Pacific Beat. You are listening to Pacific Beat on this very special holiday episode of the show, where we look back at one country and the stories that made it in 2022. Today, we're looking at Papua New Guinea. And as we just heard from journalist Belinda Cora, a historic moment in PNG politics was reached this year when two female MPs were elected to parliament. Kesi Sawang, a member of the Mindang Rai Coast, was one of them. She became the ninth woman in the history of Papua New Guinea's politics to be elected to a parliament. And when she spoke to Pacific Beat back in August after her election, she said her route to success had been tough.
I've worked on this for 5 years, so I was pretty confident that the race will be between myself and the sitting member. I worked on my strategies for first preference votes, and I worked also on my strategies for second and third.
And what do you think it is that has persuaded people to vote for you? Because, of course, history tells us that it's very, very difficult for a female candidate to get support.
Yeah, that is true. Like, I come from a district that is very remote, and the culture is very strong, and in the mindset of the people, like, political leadership is reserved only for the male. But I think it's the way we approach the issue. Like for me, I don't go and tell people to vote for me. I go and educate them about how the government system works, and I educate them a lot of things that they don't know. So when people have this new knowledge about things, they feel empowered. So they use the knowledge to assess all the candidates. And I'm sure you watch some of my videos. I don't actually campaign. I don't promise people things because I think in my district, because we haven't seen development for so long, the people have a kind of they don't trust the people who go and tell them that, you know.
Now that the declaration has been made, and you know you will be heading to Parliament quite soon, I would imagine. I don't know whether you'll get there in time today with the sitting currently on. But what are your plans now? What do you hope to achieve now that you've been elected?
What I want to do now is especially be the voice for my district, because our voice is actually missing. Our meaning that my district, our voice is actually missing there in Parliament. So the first thing I want to do is actually have our voice in there, because in my district, we host two of Papua New Guinea's big projects. One of them is the Chinese-run Ramunikul project. The Basamok Bay is actually in my village, and we have another project. It's an agri-industry project called the Ramu Sugar. It's in another LLG called Nahurawa. So we contribute to the economy, but if you come to my district, like, we have no roads, and we just literally have very, very poor government services.
Now, of course, until your result was declared, we knew that Rufina Peter had been elected as governor of Central Province, and she was set to enter Parliament as the only female member. Now, of course, there will be two of you. Do you see yourself forming some sort of an alliance with her, perhaps, to represent women in PNG?
Rufina is a friend of mine, and the first thing both of us will do, we'll set up the Women's Caucus, and there'll be only two of us, but we very much want to see many women actually come in. So that's one of the things we'll work together on that.
And what celebrations do you have planned now as regards your victory, or do you not have time for that? Do you have to get on with the practicalities of it?
We don't have like celebrations, fireworks, no, not that kind of stuff, but we're just going to bring the team together and say thank you. And, you know, in our ways, we say kai kai, so we do a thank you kai kai, and that's it.
That was Kessie Sawang, who was confirmed as the new MP for the seat of Madang in Wright Coast in Papua New Guinea back in August. Well, that was also the time that interview first went to air. And she was, of course, speaking there to reporter Richard Hewitt.
You're listening to Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia.
And despite some good news for the female politicians running in PNG's 2022 election, it was also labelled the worst, bloodiest and most disorganised vote in PNG's history. It left citizens and experts calling for drastic measures to improve the democratic process, as Marion Farr reported back in August.
Cameras clicked as Papua New Guinea's re-elected Prime Minister James Marape swore in his new cabinet yesterday. The ceremony at PNG's Parliament House foreshadows an end to one of the country's most violent and disorganised elections in history. While the total death toll is still being counted, it's believed to be more than 50. For PNG citizens, this election won't be easily forgotten.
It's the worst election, and I think, I don't know what our country holds for us.
James Giwi, a 66-year-old church minister in the city of Lae, is deeply worried about how the democratic process played out.
There are people killed everywhere. There's fights everywhere.
After the polls opened in early July, the election has been marred by violence, allegations of vote tampering, electoral roll inaccuracies, and huge delays to counting. In the Southern Highlands capital of Mendi, one seat remains undeclared, and riots have broken out in recent days as tensions brew over the delays. Lucas Martin is a local business owner.
There have been several homes being destroyed, and lives have been lost. People are terrified. The fear is always around, you know.
He says many PNG citizens have lost faith in the democratic process.
There's no transparency in the conduct of the elections. That is a real issue.
And it's something he wants PNG's newly elected politicians to fix.
The government needs to really, really come hard on this and really seriously need to address this.
Dr. Terence Wood, a research fellow at the Development Policy Centre, agrees something needs to be done. He puts the problems down to poor preparation and underinvestment in policing, security and the country's electoral commission.
If you want to run elections well, you've really got to start planning for them a long way out. You've got to start spending on them a long way out.
But he says there may be little incentive for politicians to change things. That's because in PNG, people tend to vote mostly on local issues that will benefit their communities and families, leaving national agenda items like the running of elections to fall by the wayside.
Politicians really aren't that focused on it.
The ABC has contacted Prime Minister James Marape for comment, but didn't receive a response. Kavieng MP Ian Ling Stuckey, who has retained his position as Treasury Minister, told local media that election spending in 2022 was at record levels. But Dr. Wood says more is clearly needed and Australia could help out.
To play a somewhat catalytic role, to really start pressing for reform and to really play an active part in resourcing the electoral process.
PNG's next general election is due to be held in 5 years' time. If things don't change by then, Dr. Wood fears the worst.
If the legitimacy of Papua New Guinea's elected representatives continues to fall because the process through which they're selected is seen as somewhat rigged, then I suspect the public will become increasingly disenchanted with the nature of governance in the country, and the current electoral flaws might lead to some sort of slow-motion democratic collapse.
That was Dr. Terence Wood from the Development Policy Centre, ending that report by Marion Farr. And that report did first go to air in August. It was the day after Prime Minister Marape's cabinet was sworn in.
Join me, Rick Howe, on Island Music for the finest in ska, rocksteady, roots, dub, sizzling dancehall and all the hottest releases from around the Pacific.
Hi, I'm Ronnie Coreni from Sorong Samurai and you're listening to Island Music.
My name is Tieni from Te Tangi o Te Kara and you're listening to Island Music.
Join me, Rick Howe, on Island Music.
Saturdays, 12 p.m. PNG time on ABC Radio Australia.
And this is Pacific Beat. I'm Priyanka Srinivasan. Hope you're having a lovely Thursday morning. You're joining us here for a special holiday episode of this show where we look back at the stories that made Papua New Guinea in 2022. And as you might know, Pacific Break, the region's biggest music competition, wrapped up earlier this month. We received hundreds of entries from 15 countries across the Pacific. It was tough work for the judges to declare a winner from so many incredible original tracks, but an artist was crowned. The winner of Pacific Beat, or Pacific Break, I should say, 2022, was Danielle from Papua New Guinea with her powerful track Fight, inspired by the West Papuans' ongoing fight for independence. Let's relive that moment she found out. Hi, is that Danielle?
Yes, it is.
Hi, Danielle. This is Priyanka. I'm from ABC Radio Australia's Pacific Beat. Now, I have some good news for you, Danielle. Congratulations. You are the winner of Pacific Break 2022. Congratulations. How do you feel?
I'm sorry.
Don't apologize. I mean, it's a big moment here, and yes, your award-winning song was called Fight. I'll give you a moment, but it sounds there that you're quite surprised and overwhelmed by it.
Yeah, actually, I am. Oh my gosh. I wasn't expecting it, honestly. Wow. I didn't prepare myself for this. But wow.
Yes.
Yeah, this is huge.
I know you've just found out. Why don't we go back and take you back? What made you want to apply to Pacific Break in the first place?
So basically, when I first heard about Pacific Break, it was through Sprigga Mech, and, you know, it just looked like such a great opportunity and a great platform to share music. So I thought, you know, I'll give it a shot. When I saw it come around again, I saw it pop up on Facebook, and I thought, okay, I'll, you know, submit it. And the Fight song, I was actually one of my first singles, but I wasn't very happy with the quality. So I thought I'll redo it and submit it. And then when we did redo it, I was so much more happier with the quality. And I thought, okay, I'll send that through. So Yeah, I mean, just making it into the finals was enough of an achievement for me. I was more than happy with just that, you know. But, I mean, getting this is, it means so much to me.
I want to tell you, the judges were so impressed by the song that you did submit, Fight, as you said, and the power and the emotion that comes through that song as well. Can you tell us a bit about what went into making that song, why you did want to put so much emotion into that prize-winning now song?
So initially when I wrote Fight, it was inspired by West Papua and their fight for freedom. And when I redid it, because we're having a lot of, you know, issues in PNG right now with tribal fights and just social problems. So I think it was more like I you know, thinking of West Papua, but then also my own country, and singing that song. That's where the emotion, I think, came through for it, because, you know, we're just in a place right now where the time right now in PNG is so hard for a lot of people. So that's basically what pushed me to sort of give my best on the second take of the song.
I don't know if you know this, Danielle, but you're actually the first female winner of Pacific Break ever in the history of the competition. I mean, how do you feel about that, this historic win and representing female musicians across the Pacific?
Are you taking me on a roller coaster ride right now?
I didn't mean to, Danielle, but it is big news.
Oh my gosh. That's even like, man, to be able to represent like women, especially on this sort of platform, that's an achievement.
An achievement indeed. That was Pacific Break winner Danielle from Papua New Guinea there, speaking to me earlier this month when I announced the winner of that competition. You're listening to a special holiday version of Pacific Beat, where we take a look back at the stories that made one country in the Pacific this year in 2022. Today, we're taking a look at Papua New Guinea. And during this holiday season, many of us, I'm sure, will be enjoying a drink or two with family and friends. But spare a thought for our friends in Papua New Guinea, where the cost of some alcoholic drinks are set to skyrocket due to a newly imposed tax, a 500% increase to the excise tax on certain pre-mixed drinks was announced in Papua New Guinea's 2023 national budget. But spirits aren't the only things being mixed here. Opinions on the new tax are also divided, as Marion Farr reported earlier this month.
Lick, lick money, big plus buck. It's a saying heard frequently across Papua New Guinea. It means, for a little money, you can get very drunk, often referring to cheap pre-mixed drinks with high alcohol content.
A lot has changed growing up in Port Moresby in the past, say, 15 years since the introduction of cheap pre-mixed alcohol into the market.
Richard Marion has lived in Port Moresby most of his life, and he says pre-mixed alcohol is to blame for a rise in crime.
I think it's rapidly became popular, especially amongst young unemployed people in the city. They represent a large part of the consumer market. The growth, the popularity was quite exponential.
He's noticed more theft, violence, and general antisocial behaviour, like loud parties and people being a nuisance on the streets.
We're a lot more guarded and apprehensive, because a lot of the riffraff about committing petty crime, they're not doing that to feed an empty stomach, if you will. They're just committing petty crime so that they could get the next fix.
For years, disgruntled citizens have been calling for something to be done. And last week, the PNG government announced a dramatic 493% increase in the tax on these types of alcoholic drinks. Kelly Samoff, an economics lecturer from the University of Papua New Guinea, says consumers will feel the pinch.
This is a pretty hefty tax. The prices of these types of alcoholic drinks, they will go up, they will increase.
It's expected to raise an additional 30 million kina for the government next year.
This goes in line with the government's plan to continue growing their revenue base, because what we're seeing is that this current government has a plan, right, to reduce their budget deficit by 2027.
The tax will be applied at the point of sale, meaning buyers will bear the brunt. But Mr. Samoff says local producers of alcoholic drinks will also be impacted.
Employees employed in these alcohol industries might be let go. And even one manufacturer stated that they might let go of 2,000 employees. And if that's 2,000 employees let go, then that's 2,000 families, you know, in PNG without a steady income.
Richard Marion believes these companies should take responsibility.
The companies that produce and sell cheap alcohol or premixed alcohol have long enjoyed the revenues and the business from the alcohol sales. However, I don't feel like they have fully attended to the corporate social responsibility to these communities from which they profit from.
It's a sentiment shared by lay resident Ezra Kaipaletti. He also attributes social issues in his city to cheap alcohol.
Incidents like people stabbing each other from knives or causing troubles with other communities, they get themselves into troubles fighting from each other, and those things never end.
But not everyone is in favour of the new tax. Port Moresby local Solomon Korowa believes young people will turn to illegal home-brewed alcohol instead, which can be extremely dangerous to consume.
When they increase the price, they tend to other sources of alcohol like homebrew or drugs. It's going to cause more problems from my point of view.
He also worries that a rise in alcohol prices will impact families.
Especially the fathers, most of them are alcoholics, so if they tend to drink more alcohol and they spend more money on alcohol, then I don't think by the end of the day the family won't have any food to eat. So for me, I don't think it's a good idea.
Mr. Korowa wants to see the government investing more in other strategies.
I think they should increase the police presence in its suburbs. Mostly they should put the concentration into the law and order. That's the only problem here.
While Richard Marion is in favour of the alcohol tax, he agrees it's only a first step.
I think the efforts should extend from imposing this tax into bolstering current legislation on offences related to alcohol abuse and antisocial behaviour in our communities.
That was Port Moresby resident Richard Marion, ending Marion Farr's report that first went to air in early December. You're tuned in to a special holiday episode of Pacific Beat, where we look back at the stories that made Papua New Guinea this year in 2022. A rare bird thought to be extinct in Papua New Guinea has been sighted for the first time in more than 140 years. The black-naped pheasant pigeon was spotted on camera by an expedition team while searching the island of Ferguson, east of the PNG mainland. The island was the last documented location for the bird, which hasn't been seen since 1882. John Mittermeier is director of the Lost Birds Program at the American Bird Conservancy and co-leader of the expedition, and spoke to Pacific Beat back in November.
None of our team got to see this bird in person. We only got it on the camera. And I think that, you know, it says a little bit about the bird itself. It's extremely elusive. It seems to be extremely shy. So we were extremely happy to document it, to get the pictures. But I also would have loved to see it myself. Might have to save that for the next trip. We planned this entire expedition in search of this one particular bird. It was a species that had appeared on our radar as part of our larger Search for Lost Birds program, which has identified around 140 species of birds around the world that are lost, meaning that they have no confirmed documentation in the form of photos, audio recordings, or genetic material in the last 10 or more years. And among that list, the pheasant pigeon is one of only about 20 birds that had not been documented for more than a century. And it was also critically endangered. So we thought it was a real priority species to look for. It's very shy, very elusive. But I think also to be clear, it hadn't been documented by scientists for more than a century, But in fact, as we discovered over the course of this expedition, and how we did eventually find the bird, was by tapping into the knowledge of the local people there on Ferguson Island. And it turns out they'd been seeing the pheasant pigeon much, much more recently. And it was by talking to them and eventually finding one man in particular who had seen it just a few months earlier and was able to take us to the exact spot where he had seen that bird. And that's where he set our camera. That's where he got the picture. But it was really a process of talking to the local people and getting to learn about their knowledge of this bird. And they had seen it much more regularly than, much more recently, sorry, than any scientific reports had. So there were many moments of worry there. Actually, when we first arrived on the island, we started interviewing people in a few communities there. And the first few people we talked to were incredibly knowledgeable about birds. They knew many of the local species. They knew them by call. They knew them by sight. And when we asked them about this bird, they said quite confidently that they'd never seen it and they'd never heard about it. And so once we started to get information like that, we thought, wow, maybe this bird is not in this area. Maybe it's been extinct for quite a while. And we were on Ferguson for four weeks, almost a month. And it was literally on the second to last day that we did finally get this picture. And not long before we saw the picture, I was actually doing interviews with some of my colleagues where we were talking about how we felt, our sort of feelings about having not found the bird. So we really thought we were going to fail. There were many moments where we thought we were not going to be able to find this species. And then at the very last moment, things took a turn for the better. We didn't have anything to entice the bird, but what we did is we'd placed the camera in a spot where, this local man, Augustine Gregory, had recommended that we put it. It was a spot where he said he'd seen the bird before. So we were following his advice. It turned out to be excellent advice. And that's how we selected the location. But nevertheless, despite having this advice, there was still a lot of uncertainty, you know, in talking with him, because there'd been so few records of the bird. We weren't even sure at times if we were talking about the same type of bird or if maybe he was thinking of a different species than we were. So there was a ton of uncertainty. We actually had quite a lot of cameras out. We had 20 cameras us in total. And the vast majority of the cameras got nothing. So it was really just, you know, that first photograph was one camera. It happened to be the only animal we actually got. We photographed on that camera. So we really felt just unbelievably lucky when we first saw those pictures.
And that was expedition leader John Mittermeier speaking to me there back in November. And today we are looking at the stories that made up Papua New Guinea here on Pacific Beat. And we're also wrapping up the top sports story of our featured nation every day this week. PNG is the only country in the world where rugby league is overwhelmingly the national sport. So, of course, that sport featured heavily in 2022, but there was also action in the AFL, weightlifting and soccer. Nick Fogarty takes a look at how Pacific Beat saw PNG's year in sport.
With Rugby League World Cups for both men and women taking place in 2022, it was set to be an important year for PNG. Both teams duly fronted up in the north of England in October, and both were successful in making it out of their pool group. For the men, though, it ended with a 46-6 defeat against England in the quarterfinal, and while the women made it one step further, their 82-0 loss to Australia in the semi was the team's heaviest defeat in history. Despite the loss, the Orchids managed two wins for the tournament, which was their best ever World Cup result. It was a source of pride for captain Elsie Albert, who also won a place in the team of the tournament.
It's been quite a journey for us, you know, not winning a game in the past World Cup and coming into this tournament with a zero win. For us, is to get two wins, and then I think it's good for us, and we're only going to build from there.
Coach Ben Jeffries said things were looking up for PNG Women's Rugby League.
They're only going to get bigger and better from here. As long as they get some pathways put inside their nation going forward, this is going to create a big PNG Orchids following.
To fast-track development, Jeffries also called for the formation of a PNG Hunters women's team to compete in the Queensland Rugby League. For the men's Hunters, 2022 was probably one to forget, as the challenges of the COVID pandemic took their toll. The Hunters spent the season based on the Gold Coast and ended up finishing 12th out of 14 teams, a far cry from the euphoria of their 2017 premiership season. At the same time in 2022, a growing chorus of voices were calling for the entry of a PNG team into the NRL, including from Australia's new Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, who said at the Pacific Islands Forum in July that the league should eventually include teams from both PNG and the wider Pacific. His Defence Minister, Richard Marles, was even stronger in October, saying now is the time for a PNG team. It wasn't all rugby league this year, though. PNG's weightlifters were also in the spotlight, as Moria Bairu won Commonwealth Games silver in the men's 61kg. A podium spot wasn't to be this time for the extraordinary Dika Tua, however, competing at her fifth Commonwealth Games weightlifting event and with a gold and two silvers behind her. But when asked about her future plans by Pacific Beat, she took a positive mindset.
Well, I'll be 40 by then in Paris, so I won't promise, but yeah, it's not getting any easier as we age, but Paul always tells us it's all in the mind, so age doesn't matter. So I've had this mentality all this time, and yeah, you never know.
Meanwhile, it was a momentous year for advocates of Australian rules football in PNG, and for one young man in particular, as Awego Hoya, the 20-year-old from Port Moresby, made his AFL debut for the Gold Coast Suns in July. In doing so, he joined an elite club, scoring a goal with his first ever kick.
Chance here for Casbolt again. Moore came crashing through. Handball is good.
Weir is the first AFL player to ever come through the PNG development pathway and burst onto the scene at the 2017 International Cup in Melbourne, where he starred for PNG's victorious national side. On the soccer field, there were some big highlights for PNG as the women took home their first OFC Nations Cup title, beating Fiji 2-1 in the final. Just a couple of weeks later, though, the squad was turned upside down as the winning coach, Nicolas Demain, was sacked in controversial circumstances. Some players were confused and unhappy at the sacking, and details are still murky on why it happened. The team now has a new coach, but speaking 4 months later in December, PNG sports reporter Patricia Kemo said valuable time had been lost in the team's World Cup preparations.
The players haven't had that much game time or a training camp until the Pacific Four Nations tournament. So, yeah, a lot of people in PNG are saying that time has lost, and obviously they will question whether the period from now until February is enough.
And that's the year in sport for Papua New Guinea.
And that was Nick Fogarty with that report.
Pacific Beat.
For all you listening in Papua New Guinea and across the Pacific, hope you are welcoming in a great new year very soon. I'll be back with you tomorrow morning. Thank you.